This is the Daf Yomi Masechta Review, Masechta Baba Basra, Tape Number 1. This review is only meant for people who learn Daf Yomi on a regular basis, or those who have learned through the Masechta. It is the goal of this review to be as accurate as possible in summarizing the highlights and key klalim of the Masechta. However, it is possible that on occasion something will not be reflected correctly.
For a subscription information about the Daf Yomi Masechta Review, call us toll free at 1-888-DAF-YOMI.
This tape is dedicated in memory of Rabbi Yosef ben Reuven Model, Zichrono Livracha. Our Magid Shia is Rabbi Yossi Heber.
We are beginning Masechta Baba Basra. This Masechta is the longest in Shas, comprising of 176 blat, the same number of psukim that are in the longest Parsha in the Torah, Parshas Nasai, which has 176 psukim. We know that there are three Masechtas which comprise of the main Halachas of Nezikin, Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, and Baba Basra. While Masechta Baba Kama deals with damages, and Masechta Baba Metzia deals with lost objects and ribbis, Masechta Baba Basra focuses primarily on the basic laws of business. The Masechta has 10 prakim. The first parak discusses Dinei Shutfis. The second parak deals with the protection of property from potential damage. The third parak is Parak Cheskas Habatim. The fourth through seventh prakim deal with the laws of selling of homes, gardens, fields, animals, grains, as well as the inyane of mida u'mishka. Parak Chesed Tes discuss Hilchis Yerusha. And finally, the final parak, Parak Yud, discusses Shtaris. The first parak, beginning with the Mishnah here on Daf Beis, Masechta Baba Basra, deals with Hezek Re'iya, damages caused by sight. If a person's garden is in full sight of someone else's property, he's a bit damaged, since he loses some of his privacy. The question is whether the neighbor is chayev to build a wall so he can't see into your property. I.e., do we say hezek re'iyah is shmei hezek? The hezek, the damage based on the fact that someone could see and it takes away some of your privacy, is considered a hezek. Therefore, you must act on this restriction of the property, of the privacy associated with it, and build the wall. Or do we say that you don't have to do this? And the Mishnah begins. Hashutfin sheratzu lasois mechitza b'chotzer. Two people owned a courtyard jointly in front of their houses. And now they want to split the courtyard and have a private yard, each one a private yard of their own. And they were going to split it via a wall. Now, if you hold Hezek Re as Shmei Hezek, then the pshat is that they choose on their own to divide the chotzer. But the wall is now a chiv. If you hold Hezek Re as Lav Shmei Hezek, so even the construction of the wall is optional. If they want one, they can put up a wall. If they don't want one, they don't have to put up a wall. The Mishnah now gives halachas regarding this wall. Number one, they have to build the wall in the middle of the chotzer, i.e. it must take up a little bit of space in each of their properties. Number two, they should use the type of bricks that meet the requirements of Minog HaMedina. Rashi, by the way, explains that the inyan of Hezek Re'iya only applies to a front yard, to a chatzar, where a lot of activity goes on. Hence, there's a loss of privacy. But this won't apply to a backyard, where a lot of activity doesn't take place, and you lose the privacy, and then you get into these questions of Hezek Re'iya. Number three, the Mishnah says, if at some point the whole wall falls into one of the yards, they still each get half of the bricks, because the truth is that half of the bricks belong to one and half of the bricks belong to the other. The Rosh Lahalacha learns from here that although the material used for the wall is Kamin and Kamadina, the size of the wall is designated by the Chachamim. Number four, for a garden it depends on Min and Kamadina if you're required to put up a wall. But for farmland, you can't force a wall if one doesn't want a wall. One man wants to put up a wall. If that's what comes out, that one person wants to put up a wall, he can build it on his side, and it will all belong to him. So if it falls down, the stones all belong to him. The Gemara. The word machitza, used in our Mishnah, is referring to a wall, as we learn by machitzas hakeren, where a machitza means a physical wall. If a neighbor is negligent in not building a wall for a neighboring keren, for a neighboring vineyard, and some of the plants end up becoming kelayim, the negligent one is chayef to pay damages. The Gemara says it's also for a person to stand in his friend's field when the wheat is ready for harvest, because we're afraid of ayin hara. And finally, the Gemara says, if we hold hezek ri'ya lav shmei hezek, i.e., you have no chiyuv to build a well, but you can build a well if you want to, we can learn the Mishnah kipshutai, ha-shutfin sheratzu lasis mechitza. They can choose to build a wall if ratzu, if they want to. They don't want to, they don't have to. But if you hold hezek ri'ya shmei hezek, and therefore there's a chiyuv to build a wall, this mechitza is not optional, it's a chiyuv. So what is ha-shutfin sheratzu? That lashon sounds like it's something optional. The Gemara answers, what's optional is two shutfin decide if they want to divide the chatzar or not. That's what's optional. They may want to, they may not want to, but once they decide that they want to build the wall, then of course there's a chiyuv, because hezek ri'ya shmei hezek. There's a chiyuv to build the wall. The question is if they want to divide it or not. That's where the optional part comes in. The Gemara brings numerous riyas to prove if we hold hezek ri'ya shmei hezek or lav shmei hezek. Daf Gimel. What's the chiddush of the Mishnah that they wanted to do a mechitza? If they just wanted to do it, it's like a kinyan dvarim. And with that, they could change their minds. And my answer is they didn't just say they were going to divide it, but they actually designated which part was for each one, and they walked into their chelek and made a kinyan chazaka. So now no one can change their mind. The Gemara says anytime you construct a wall for someone and you use bricks, you must put in at least one tefach of mortar between the bricks. But if you use gravel, you need to use two tefachim. The dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash were given to David HaMelech via Nevuah, and the dimensions of the second Beis HaMikdash was the same as the first Beis HaMikdash, except the second was slightly taller, and the second stood for 10 years longer than the first one, i.e. for 420 years versus the 410 years that the first Beis HaMikdash stood. We have a Kabbalah that the division between the Kodshei Kodshim and the Heichal of the second Beis HaMikdash must either be a solid wall like the first Beis HaMikdash or a solid pareches like the one in the Mishkan. The Gemara says there is an iser to tear down a shul until you have finished the replacement new shul. This is because we're afraid something will happen before the shul is rebuilt and the money will be needed for something else. For example, for the mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuyim, and therefore they won't finish the second shul. The Ramah in Siman Kufnun Beis says this is an iser daraisa. However, if there is another shul in town for people to daven in, the Magid Avram says you can be mekel, because even if something happens and they can't complete the second shul, at least they'll have this other shul to be able to daven in. If the shul has a crack in it, i.e. it is unfit for tefillah, then you can tear it down and rebuild a new one. How did Bava ben Buta tell Hurdus to knock down the Beis HaMikdash? The Gemara answers, it had cracks, or once the king is involved, you have to give kavod to the Malchus, since without the Malchus, it would have been impossible to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Daf Dalet. Hurdus killed out the Chachamim, so it was like he blinded the world, since the Pasuk says, Ner mitzvah the Tarar, which is in Mishle, therefore he was instructed to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Whoever did not see the binyan of Hurdus, i.e. the Beis HaMikdash, never really saw a beautiful building. He used green, white, and blue marble. The Mishnah. If Reuven bought land on three sides of Shimon's property, and Reuven put up a fence on three sides, Shimon doesn't have to chip in, since he has no benefit. The fourth side is still open, Rabbi Yossi says. But once he built on the fourth side, Shimon must then chip in for all four sides. Gemara. The halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, regardless of who builds the fourth side. Shimon must chip in, since now the fourth side is built, he benefits from the whole thing. How much does Shimon have to chip in? Rav Huna says, half of whatever was built, even if it's a higher quality fence made out of stone. Chiya Barab says, only half of what a cheap fence would cost, since he can say, I didn't need a stone fence, a cheap reed fence would have been good enough for me. Therefore, I'm going to pay half of what a cheaper fence would have costed. Daf Hey. Runya bought land on the border of Ravina. Ravina thought to evict him, because he had the first rights. Rav Safra said to him, even though Runya should have given you the first rights to buy, based on the pasuk of Sisa Hayashar Vataiv, but since you're wealthy and he's poor, do him a favor and let him keep the land. The next Mishnah. A wall between two courtyards that fell down, we can require a second guy to pay half of up to a wall as tall as Dalaramas. That's the limit the Chachamim were Machayev someone to chip in for Hezek Ri'ya. If the wall is built already, and you now want him to claim, you now want to claim from Shimon his half, unless you can prove that he hasn't paid, we assume that he's already paid you. This is based on the fact that everyone knows Shimon is chayev to pay half, and the Chazakah states that Reuven wouldn't even begin to build the wall unless Shimon gave him some cash to buy bricks. Rashi explains that Reuven would have to bring Edim, that Reuven came to Shimon to get money, and he refused. The Rush learns these Edim wouldn't be enough, since maybe the next day Shimon did pay. So the Rush learns that Reuven must bring Edim that Shimon couldn't have paid because he was in Medinat Hayam. And the Mishnah continues, from any point above the Dalet Amos of the wall, Reuven would have to pay for the wall himself if you want something higher than Dalet Amos. However, if Shimon builds a second high wall, which is higher than Dalet Amos, which indicates that he would also want a very high wall, then we say Magalgin Olavas Hakol, and he'd be mechuyev to pay Reuven for half of his wall also, even the part which is above Dalet Amos. Gemara. Reish Lakish says, if someone lent his friend some money, and they made up a pay-up date of 6 months from now, and Vileva says he already paid up after 4 months, he isn't believed. Since the chazaka is that people don't pay up before a loan is due. They don't pay up early. If 6 months was the time, then 6 months is when it's due, and nobody comes and pays after 4 months. Rav and Abaye say, there was no such chazaka, since maybe he had extra money and therefore could pay early. Therefore he is believed that he paid back early. If this is the type of situation that he has a chazaka that he paid back bichlal, it was the chazaka that he paid up or didn't pay up, that you have to be clear on. But once you can establish the fact that he did pay up, if he says that he paid up early, then you would believe him. And the halacha is like Reish Lakish, that we say there is a chazaka, ein adam pareya teich zmane. One does not pay up his debts before they come due. So if a person claims before the due date that he already paid up, we don't believe him. Taisva says that though the rule is stam halva lamed yoim, a standard loan is considered as 30 days, nevertheless, Reish Lakish's halacha does not apply to a loan whose term was left unspecified. Taisvus asserts there is no assumption that a leiva will not repay stam halva before its 30-day term expires. Dafov. Rav Huna says once the second person, i.e. Shimon, began building a second wall, even if he just built half, we're mechuyev him to pay his fair share of Reuven's wall for the part above the Dalet Amos. The lower part, there was the lower Dalet Amos, the bottom Dalet Amos, he was always chayev for. And this chiyev for the entire first wall comes immediately. But according to Reb Nachman, he only must pay commensurate for the chelek he has already built, not for the full value of the part that's above the Dalet Amos portion of wall number one, since we're not sure if he's ever going to finish the wall completely. Background. If Reuven uses Shimon's property for a period of time, and then there is a dispute over the use of the property, there are questions as to how many rights Reuven has. The Rush says, the only way Reuven can make any claims is if he lived on the property for 3 years, Cheskas Gimel Shanim. According to Rashi, this Gemara isn't referring to the case of Cheskas Gimel Shanim. Reb Nachman says, if a person has rights to use a wall for light beams, Hardi, he can't claim rights to put heavy beams on it, Kishuri, since heavy beams hurt the wall more than light beams. But vice versa, it would be okay. Rabbi Yosef says, once he has a chazaka for weak beams, he can put heavy beams on the wall as well, since once a person buys the rights to use a wall for support, he expects to be able to use it for anything. Rabba Baravua says, if someone rents a room in a large castle, he also can use the protruding bricks from the walls or the top of the walls, since this was the minig hamakom. But it's questionable if he can use the walls of the gardens in front of the rooms. If someone builds a shed next to a wall, the first 30 days you have no chazaka, since the owner thinks it's temporary. But if it stood for more than 30 days, you can leave it and say to the Baal Bais, you didn't say anything for 30 days, so I assumed you didn't mind. Therefore I have a chazaka, and you can let it stand permanently. If the roof of one house is next to the chatzar of a different house, the one with the roof must build a fence, because this is hezek re'iyah, since he uses the chatzar. But two roofs next to each other, a fence is not needed. Dav Zayin. Two brothers shared a house. One lived on top, and one lived on the bottom. The floor of the top level was caving in more than 10 tvachim. So the first guy had to bend over his head in order to get in, since his roof is now caving in, so they can force it to be rebuilt. Gemara says when brothers divide up land as a Yerusha, one doesn't have the right to use the others as a footpath the way the father did. The next Mishnah. Someone who lives on a chatzer can be forced to contribute toward the construction of a watchman's hut or a door for the chatzer. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says, yes for the door, but not for all chatzeres. We could also force a person to contribute toward a construction of a wall, a door, and the lock of a city. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says, not every city needs a wall. The Mishnah asks, how long does one have to live in a city so he becomes a permanent resident and he has to contribute? Mishnah answers, 12 months. But if he bought a house in the city, he becomes a resident immediately. Gemara, who said it's good to have a watchman's hut? It's actually bad, because we know that once a hut was built, Eliyahu HaNavi stopped visiting a certain person. Since Aniyim wouldn't be able to ask for tzedakah, they wouldn't be able to get it. The watchman would prevent people from coming into the chatzer, and so Aniyim wouldn't be able to get in, and Eliyahu HaNavi stopped coming to visit. Gemara answers, it depends if the hut is outside the chatzer or inside the chatzer. The Gemara asks, when you assess a tax for building a wall in a city, how do you make the assessment? Based on how many people are in this person's particular household, or based on how much money you have? Rabbi Yochanan says, Lefi Mamon Gaivin, dependent on how much money the person has. If the person has more money, he has to pay more. If the person has less money, he has to pay less. The reason behind building a wall is to protect the people of the city from robbers and bandits. This would explain why a rich person has to pay more, because if robbers get into a city, he stands to lose more. The Mordechai explains that if someone owns a house taller than all other houses in the city, he must pay extra taxes, because the robbers are more likely to damage his house first, since they could see it first when they come in. It's taller. If a person lives closer to the wall, he must pay more, since again, he's more likely to be burglarized if he lives closer to the wall. It's important to mention that b'derech klal, citizens of a particular town must all chip in for tzarche tzibur, like a mikveh, a yeshiva, a rav, or a chazan. The Gemara says Talmidei Chachamim don't have to contribute to a city wall because they don't need physical protection. The Torah they learn provides the protection. The Ritva says this p'tur only applies to someone who learns Torah all the time. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein in Dibros Moshe Baba Basra Ha'ara Lamed Ches asks, how can Talmidei Chachamim rely on just the Torah they learn to protect themselves? We know the klal is Ein Sein B'chena L'Nes. In fact, even Yaakov Avinu, who was promised protection from Hashem, from Esav, was afraid that he may not be fully protected because he may have done some chatoim, he may have done some sins. In answer to this question, Rav Moshe brings the Rambam, which is brought in Pirkei Avos, Perek Dalet, who says that this p'tur is to be understood in terms of a privilege accorded to Talmidei Chachamim, and that the rest of the population is mechuyev to pay this tax on their behalf. However, Rav Moshe says that it's obvious to him that if, for example, a city is inhabited only by Talmidei Chachamim, then they're all together, collectively, mechuyev to build a wall to protect the city, and they may not rely on this merit of their Torah to miraculously deliver them from harm's way, i.e., Ein Seimchen Al Hanes. Everyone must give money to dig a well, even Talmidei Chachamim, because although Torah protects them from robbers, they still need to drink water. So for that, they have to contribute as well. Rabbi opened up his grain silos to all Talmidei Chachamim, but not to Amoratzim. One Talmid Chacham pretended to be an Amoratz and begged Rabbi for food, and Rabbi gave him food anyways. But Rabbi did say that troubles come to the world because of Amei Haaretz. In order to be chayev to pay service taxes, you're considered a resident after 30 days in regard to paying into the tamkhoi. In other words, if you lived in a city for 30 days, you then mechuyev to pay towards the tamkhoi tzedakah. If you live in a city for 3 months, you're mechuyev to pay into the kupas tzedakah, 6 months to the clothing fund, 9 months to the burial society, and if you live in a city for 12 months, you're mechuyev to contribute towards the wall of the city. Gemara says we don't take money from the estate of Yusayimim, even for the purpose of Pidyon Shvuyim, which is a major mitzvah. Gemara says death by famine is much worse than dying via the sword, because of the time that a person suffers pain during a famine is a lot more than if he dies via a sword. But dying through captivity is the worst, since you can starve or be beaten. That's why the mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuyim is so great. If a person owes money for the kupas tzedakah, you can take a mashkin from him. even on Erev Shabbos. Therefore, it's clear the collection of Kupas Tzedakah is very authoritative. Hence, two people must do it, not one. Gemara says a Gabbai Tzedakah is a Machzikei HaRabim, and the people who teach the children in the city, in Cheder, have a very big schus, and are like Kechavim, which last forever. The rule is, Ein Eisen Shrarais Al HaTzibur, Pachas Mishnayim. You can't administer tziburdika things, especially tzedakah, with anything less than two people. And when they collect money, they must go together. Otherwise, people may be chayshish them for gzela. If a gabbai tzedakah finds money in the shuk, he should put it in his kis tzedakah, not in his own pocket, so people won't be chayshish him for stealing. When he gets home, he could take it out of that, and he can keep it for himself, because after all, if a person finds something in Rishus HaRabim and it doesn't have any form of identification, he's allowed to keep it. If one collects a certain coin for tzedakah, he can replace it with a different coin, because it's not the coin itself that matters, just the value of the coin. When you give money to tzedakah, it's the value that makes a difference. Daf Tes. The rabbanim of any town are allowed to enact takanas and taxes on behalf of the city to pay for shchita, chinuch, etc., especially for the good of the market, supply, demand, etc. Of course, the Rishonim point out that in private, anyone can make a business deal on whatever he wants to, as long as the other party is maskim to the conditions. The Gemara says, Rishon bali umnes lahasiya al kitzasam. The Gemara says that if all the merchants of a certain line agree to abide by certain restrictions, such as closing their business on a certain day, or all the members of a certain profession agree not to work for less than a certain wage, their mutual agreement is legally binding, and therefore it may not be violated. Kuntrasal Adaf quotes Harav Moshe Feinstein, who says that this Gemara lends halakhic authority to the concept of labor unions. He says that if the members of a certain union mutually agree to abide by certain practices, their agreement is halakhically binding. Thus, if the union agrees to strike, for example, they are entitled to fine any member who crosses the picket line if it was so agreed upon. Ramesh, however, rules that the union is only empowered to enforce their edicts with monetary fines, but not with physical force. If we have an honest gabbai tzedakah, we must trust him, and he isn't mechuyev to give us a cheshbon of every ani he gave money to. If a person comes and says he needs food, you can investigate if he really needs food. But if he comes without clothing, you should give him clothing immediately, because he's embarrassed without clothing. Others hold the halacha as just the opposite. You check if a person needs clothing, but you don't check if a person says he needs food. A traveling ani should be given at least enough food for one meal, as well as a place to sleep. For Shabbos, we give him mazon shalish suudas. If an ani knows his way around town, how to collect, in other words, who to go to, who are the wealthy people who would give money, then you're not mechuyev to give him money, since he's already faring well on his own. If a person should be sure to give at least one-third of a shekel for tzedakah every year. Rebbe Loza says, Godal ha-maisa yoser min ha-isa. A person who influences someone else to give tzedakah is greater than the one who gives tzedakah himself. If a person gives tzedakah, he has a very big schus. If he doesn't give tzedakah, the government will take it away from him anyways. And this is, in fact, in the United States how it works. If a person gives tzedakah, he gets a tax deduction on that money. If he doesn't give the tzedakah, then that income is considered as full income, and it's fully taxable. Just like each little piece of thread is small, but combined with many small pieces of thread make a piece of clothing, so too with tzedakah. Each pruta times many prutas creates one big schus. If one gives tzedakah secretly, this is even more powerful than what Moshe Rabbeinu had the power to do. Tzedakah can also cover up any anger that a Kadosh Baruch Hu has on a certain person. Any judge who takes a bribe brings a major wrath of anger from Hashem. Rabbi Yitzchak said, whoever gives an ani a pruta gets 6 special brachas. And if he comforts him with words, he gets 11 brachas. And if a person is always looking to do chesed, he will have a lot of kavod and tzedakah. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi says, anyone who gives a lot of tzedakah will have children who are chachamim, talmidei chachamim, and ashirim. Daf Yud. If an apikiris wants to criticize us, he could ask the following question. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves aniyim so much, why doesn't he feed them? Here's how you should answer. The reason he doesn't feed them is so that we should be able to give tzedakah, get the mitzvah, and therefore we should be nitzel from Gehenna. Whereas it's just like how much money a person makes is determined on Rosh Hashanah, so too are the losses that a person will have in that year. But if a person gives tzedakah, he could change this gzera and not lose the money. If someone looks away from the mitzvah of tzedakah, it's like being an eved of a dezara. Gemara says all chesed and tzedakah that we do in this world creates special malachim to come to our help in speaking to Hashem. And Rabbi Yehuda says, G'daylis tzedakah shemekareves es ha-ge'ula. Giving tzedakah brings Mashiach closer to us. What is the connection between giving tzedakah and bringing Mashiach? I heard from Rabbi Shimon Weingarten, a Rav here in London, that since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, by giving tzedakah, you're doing the biggest thing, which is not Sinas Chinam. Therefore, it's as if you're fighting against what destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and by giving tzedakah, which is completely against Sinas Chinam, you can help rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, which was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. Also, the Gemara says, we say, tzedakah tatzil mimavis. Tzedakah saves a person from death, especially an unnatural death. Gemara says if a melech baser v'dam receives a gift, it's a suffix if the giver who gives the gift will ever get to see the king. Because sometimes the king receives the gift and won't see the person who gave him the gift. But if someone gives tzedakah, he zeichet yimekabel pnei shechina. Rabbi Elazar wouldn't daven in the morning until he gave tzedakah to an ani. The highest form of tzedakah is if you give tzedakah and you don't know who is getting it, and the ani doesn't know who gave it. The next levels or if you know, but he doesn't, or if he knows and you don't. Gemara says, chesed le'umim chatas. The chesed of the peoples is an avera. This is based on the pasuk in Mishle. The nations of the world, if they do chesed, it's considered chesed le'umim. It's the chesed of society, institutionalized by the social structure of the nations. It does not emanate from the kindness and the consideration of one individual for another. This is why it's designated as a chet, and it's not considered a mitzvah. What should a person do so we'll have the schus of having banim zecharim? Rabbi Elazar says, he should give money to poor people. Rabbi Yeshua says, he should make his wife happy before they fulfill their mitzvah together. They asked Shlomo HaMelech, who is a ben olam haba? And he answered, if people honor a person for his wisdom, then he's a ben olam haba. When Yosef ben Rabbi Yeshua was sick, and he was in a death trance, and then he got better after the death trance, and they asked him what he saw up there in Shemayim. He said, I saw an Olam Hafuch. The ones who were El Yainim in this world were low in Olam Haba. And the Tachtainim in this world, the ones who were low in this world, were El Yainim. They were high up in Olam Haba. And about the Talmidei Chachamim, they said, Ashrei mi shaba'u lekan v'talmudai biyadei. It's nice for a person who comes up to Shemayim and he has his learning with him. And about the Harugei Malchus, those killed by the government, they said, no one was roy to stand in their presence. That's how great they were. If someone gives tzedakah, so he gets a reward, he gets the full reward, even though it's not lishma. Kala emer sela zel tzedakah b'shvil sheyichya bini, or b'shvil se'ezke l'olam haba, harei zet tzedakah gomer. It's considered a full tzedakah. But if a guy gives tzedakah, he gets no tzchus, since they only do it so their kingdom will live longer. Ifra Hormiz was the mother of a king and a guy. She sent 400 zuzim to Rav Ami for tzedakah, but he refused to distribute it because it was from a guy. She then sent it to Rava, who did distribute it because of Shalom Malchus. Rashi adds that if one provides food to Jews, they can also provide food to Goyim. Ibnei Darkei Shalom. In other words, if you're already on a drive to give money to Aniyim, and some Jews get it, Goyim can get it just as well. Daf Yadav. Binyamin HaTzadik took money from his own pocket, even though the kupa tzedakah was empty, in order to save a woman and her seven sons. When he got sick, the malachim in Shemayim told HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save him, because of the klal, kol hamakayim nefesh achas mi Yisrael, ki ilu kiyam oylam mole. A person saves one life, even today, it's as if he saves an entire world. And since he saved this particular life, he was given an additional 22 years to his life. Finally, giving tzedakah not only helps in this world, but it helps a person in Olam Haba as well.